I'm Laura Vinroot Poole. For 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store. Capital has never really been about fashion. It's always been about people. What we wore was created to share the meaningful journeys that inspire me. From the designers and friends I meet on the road to the men and women with whom I work each day.
Everybody wants to know her.
I recognize it's been a while since the end of season 5 and wanted to share why that is. For the last several months, I've been undergoing treatment for breast cancer. I was diagnosed in the spring and had a double mastectomy in the summer and had my second surgery 4 weeks ago, my reconstruction, and am on the mend and getting myself back together and getting ready to record season 6, but wanted to share my experience with you in hopes that it would help people and also just let you know what's going on in my life. For the last 5 seasons and for many, many years, Meredith has been the producer of this podcast, but also my friend and colleague, and we thought that it would make sense for Meredith to ask questions and to talk me through the process and sharing with you my experience.
Will you tell us about when you were diagnosed and what that initial prognosis was?
I was diagnosed in the spring, I would say in April, but that was my mother had breast cancer 3 times and finally had a mastectomy, her third diagnosis. I feel like I've been trying to outrun it for a long time. I have a lot in my family on both sides, and I started to go for early mammograms in my late 30s, and I never had a mammogram where I wasn't called back, and they didn't bring a box of tissues, and bring in the radiologist or to do the ultrasound, and it was always a 3-hour ordeal, and it was always sort of scary and depressing, and then at the end they would say, we're just going to watch it for a year. But every single time, and I say every single, out of probably 10 mammograms in 10 years from 38 to 48, I had one that they didn't call me back. but anyway, I had my first needle biopsy this time in April, and it came back malignant. And I wasn't surprised, and even when I was getting the biopsy, they hit a nerve while they did it. It's this really draconian kind of just medieval process. You're on a gurney and they have a big needle and all of the stuff. And they hit a nerve and I started crying and I couldn't stop crying. It was sort of one of those things where, when that one tear falls and then you just can't stop crying. And the nurse said, honey, you don't need to cry. We don't really think this is cancer. We think, we're just doing this to be just to make sure we're doing our jobs well. And I said, no, I'm pretty sure it is. and sure enough, it was. And I wasn't surprised, but I was surprised. I mean, I think I'm young. I really have for the last at least 10 years been sort of trying to outrun this and, supplements and exercise and all the things that I guess every hippie doctor, and I also had been seeing my oncologist was my mother's, and the person who performed my surgery was the person who performed my mother's, and I had been seeing him to try to mitigate my risk and what were the things that I could do, and I couldn't run fast enough.
That was one of the ones that they've been watching for a while, it's come back
it was the exact same spot every single time, and I think that's the thing too, and they also, it was sort of under my arm and kind of seemed like it was behind my rib or something. And in the end, they said the tumor was way bigger than they thought it was because they couldn't really see it. And so I think this whole time,
how big was it?
It was over an inch long. And so I think that it would have been he said, glad we didn't do a lumpectomy because it would have been a mastectomy just to get the margins. But they didn't know until they went in. So anyway.
You made the right choice from the beginning.
Well, I mean, that's one thing that's been really interesting about it is that you realize that women could have the exact same diagnosis and there's not one person that chooses the same treatment. And so I think that's been really interesting for me. You know, I think you want to be like, this is what it is. Here's how you treat it. These are the exact things you need to do. But it's really not like that. I mean, they give you a whole book of choices mm-hmm. and all along the way, you have to make those choices with your family and with a lot of self-reflection and great guidance by your care team, which I have an incredible care team. And one of my doctors is somebody I grew up with and went to boarding school with and mm-hmm. have known forever. And I think having an incredible care team is really key. And I felt really, really lucky to have that. I think, Meredith, one of the things that surprised me the most is I have such incredible support from my family. And obviously my whole family's been through this before with my mom, but it is incredible how lonely it feels mm-hmm. and how alone you feel, because ultimately you are the person that does have to make the decisions. And also you're the person who has to go through the things mm-hmm. as much love and support. And I mean, I nobody's had as much love and support, I feel like, as I have. And it's been remarkable, but I still felt really, really alone. The times when it felt really alone were with, you know, insomnia, when you're alone at night and can't sleep and mm-hmm. thinking about all the 100 things that you could do, which direction to go, or, you know, all of the things and what could happen, and, you know, living in tomorrow, which is the worst thing.
Yeah. What would you say to a woman who's in the midst of something similar, or no matter what that journey is, that feels alone?
I think just finding one person, and again, some of my greatest support was from people I've never met before. So I don't think it could come from surprising places. Mm-hmm. Even just having one person that either just listens, or also, I mean, great to find somebody that has gone through it in a similar way or something. I mean, everybody's been through something hard. I realized when I made my list with you of the people that I wanted to share it with and tell what was happening, it was neat for me to see, kind of reflect on my life, my mm-hmm. 49 years. And, you know, it was my best friend from kindergarten, and it was my best friend from Knowles, and it was my best friend from Andover. And it was, you know, it was all these people that I probably haven't seen in 20 years even, but we're exactly the same. We're as close as we ever were. And mm-hmm. there was no doubt that these people were still the most important people in my life. I don't know if you know this, but my college roommate who I just adore, but I've seen her a handful of times in 20 years since 30 years since college. Mm-hmm. She wrote me a letter every other day. And so I have a stack of cards, letters, notes from her, and they didn't say anything profound. I mean, some of them did, mm-hmm. But they were profound in that they said, you know, I'm sitting at the beach and watching the construction of the house next door, and they're building a really ugly deck around it, and just wanted you to know I was thinking of you, and I love you, and I hope you're healing. And I just, the banality, I guess, or of these just simple,
yeah,
these simple notes that just said, I'm, you know, watching a bird and a bird eating from a bird feeder. I mean, just like, oh, I don't know. The love in that was so profound to me.
Yeah.
The simplest, most real things really meant the most.
And I remember you telling me at the beginning how you tried not to hear advice beyond you, your family, and this really strong care team that you had put together, and you stayed really true to that, and it sounds like you made the right choice because you did that.
We'll see. I mean, I think so.
Yeah, you did.
I hope so. But yeah, I think that, yes, it's sort of like being pregnant and that everybody has an opinion mm-hmm. about what you should name the baby and if you should nurse and how to do that. And, you know, I think breast cancer too, because people don't know. I mean, even my brother, who's a doctor, and I sent him all of the, you know, what kind of tumor it was mm-hmm. and all that. And even his opinion, I was kind of like, oh, I'm not really going to, I don't know if I'm really going to listen to that. I think I know what I need to do. And I think that's one thing that was pretty cool about it too, is how sure I felt about all of the things that I chose, you know, I never second guessed any of it.
I can remember a conversation we were having when you chose the double mastectomy mm-hmm. and you were saying how the doctors or friends, how many other people chose radiation or chemotherapy wouldn't, and you were ready to go for the double mastectomy.
Yep.
Why was that?
I mean, myriad reasons. And again, like, I almost don't feel like I can share it with you because it's all the details of it are my personal, they're all my reasons, mm-hmm. you know, and it's all my conversations with my care team, my family. And it's mm-hmm. also, you know, genetic testing and my experience with my mom. And, mm-hmm. I have cousins and second cousins who died in their 40s from breast cancer, and you know, I mean, like it's like the layers and layers of things, and there's no exact answer of mm-hmm. what it is, but I think in your heart you really know what the right thing is, and it's not the right thing for everybody, you yeah. know. I think that's the thing too, is and even still, you know, like all you know, a lot of doctors want you to take tamoxifen. And I mean, it's like, it's not like it's just over now, you know?
Right.
And I think that all along the way, you have to listen to your heart and listen to your gut. And, but I also think one of the things that's been really interesting about it is how much support I've gotten from people I don't know. People that I've never met before that are friends of friends that have reached out and I've communicated with, and the amount of support they've given has been remarkable. I mean, there's a person on Instagram who is a friend of a friend, and she has a handle, you know, like it's not her yeah. name. So I don't know that I even know her name. I know her by her handle, but all along the way, she was probably 6 months ahead of me on the same and had sort of the same treatment process and made a lot of the same treatment choices. And, you know, she would check in on me and say, how are you feeling today? And I'd say, I'm having a hard day. And she'd say, well, I looked into my journal and, you know, day 35 was really hard for me too. So hang in there. And, you know, I'm thinking about you. And, you know, these really like long, in-depth, really loving, caring things that from a stranger. I'm a researcher. I've read 100 books on it by now, before and after diagnosis. And there's not a ton of support online, or really, I don't know. It's hard to find the place where the information that you really want, mm-hmm. I don't know that it really exists. And so other than listening to your heart, I do think this strange friend of a friend, the people that have gone through it, this network of women that have experienced this, that's the most powerful thing of all.
Was that the most feeling of community that you kind of had, or something that created a little bit of that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, yes, but also, and you helped me send a letter out to about 100, maybe, I don't know, is it 75 mm-hmm. Friends and colleagues, and to tell them kind of what's happening and, you know, and why, and here's the process, and, you know, I don't need anything, but just want you to know, you know, wanted to be transparent and let people know what I was going through. And I have never... I mean, I have stacks of hundreds of cards, and I mean, the flowers and the food and the books, and
people really love you.
I mean, I really love people, mm-hmm. but I just have, I mean, I can't believe how loved I felt. And I think that has been a real lesson for me too, because mm-hmm. I think that working in a service business and also probably just, and maybe, I don't know if it's a fashion thing, but mm-hmm. you spend a lot of time, you know, not being able to take compliments, and that, you know, people say, you look great. And you're like, you look great. Look how amazing you look. And I think that there's a lot of kind of turning compliments on other people. And for once in my life, I think just accepted love and compliments. Mm-hmm. And it felt incredible to feel the love and to be able to accept it and keep it. I never want to be ungrateful, and I would mm-hmm. hope that my friends know how grateful I am and have been. But I also, this might be a time just to accept love.
I think there are very few times in life where you can just receive, and yeah. I feel like this is one of them.
Well, my massage therapist, she said, I told her I was having trouble breathing, like just having trouble taking deep breaths. And she said, in or out? And I said, inhaling. And she said, well, that means you're having a hard time accepting love.
Oh, wow.
and I was like, well, all right, I'm going to work on this.
When you went into that first surgery, could you feel kind of the energy and the love and the support, even as you were, because I think there were so many people that were really thinking about you in that moment. And I know that sounds crazy, but I always wonder if you can feel a little bit of that energy and love.
Yeah, I think so. And I think I had read this book, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the person who wrote it, but she suggests that you have your love group, your friend group, or the people that love you at the moment you're going into surgery, to wrap you in a pink cloud of love, a pink fluffy cloud of love. And that there, you know, there's some crazy statistics that recovery happens, you know, a week faster, or, you know, release from the hospital, all these things. I did feel it. I mean, I really did. And I know that just because I've never been, I don't know that I've really been down this whole time. I mean, I think Perry said, my husband said, it was remarkable that going into the hospital, I wasn't afraid. I was joking with the nurses. I was smiling. I was confident. I don't think I was afraid. And I think that's why.
You have such strong intuitions or gut feelings, but you've always, this whole process, there was never I'm going to be okay. This is all going to be fine. Where does that come from? Because I feel like that's maybe a God-given thing, but it's so incredible that you just know.
I mean, for me, it's faith, just faith that the right thing is happening, and the right tests are being put in front of me.
Right.
I guess. I don't know. The this is my journey. I mean, these are the things I have to go through in order to get where I need to go. Well, I mean, I guess so. It's just faith, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I also think growing up with, I'm working in therapy on it, actually, because, you know, growing up with a mom who had multiple cancer, I guess, scares, or I don't even know, diagnoses, nobody ever said she's going to be okay. Nobody ever said, it's going to be fine. So we just sort of ignored it and moved on with our life, and everybody just sort of acted like nothing was happening. So I don't know. I'm working on therapy, working in therapy on it. I don't know. But it is traumatic and incredibly traumatic. And it is like truly a medieval operation. I feel like it's not any different than it was in the 1800s. And it was really, really, really painful. And yeah, all of your nerves are cut. I had no idea how traumatic that first operation was. I don't think, because I also went through it with my mom and, you know, nursed her and all that, but I don't know that she ever told me how hard it was. And so, I don't know. It was hard. I had complications and that was hard. I'm not used to being sick. I've never been sick. I've never been in a hospital. Mm-hmm. I've never been in pain like that. You know, I mean, it was extremely painful.
Yeah. Another talent you have is to find beauty in everything, every situation, or to create it. But what was the beauty in that first surgery or the aftermath?
I mean, that's easy. I mean, that sounds crazy to say, but it's been one of the best times of my life, you know, just to spend 3 months with my husband and with my daughter and with my sister and my parents and my friends, and to be home and to have, you know, my job was so transient and so much travel, international travel and jet lag. And, you know, I also have to consider the working full time for 25 years and taking 3 months off. It's been extraordinary. I mean, I've really enjoyed it, and I've not done anything. I've not read a lot of books. I've not needle pointed. I've cross-stitched.
You didn't learn a new skill.
I didn't learn a new skill. I couldn't cook. I mean, I wasn't even supposed to walk around. I mean, so I don't know what I did other than just being here, being here now, which I don't know that I was for a really long time here now. That makes everything way more clear, you know, what's important and what you want to do and what you don't. And it makes things really simple.
In one of the first correspondences to the team, you wrote about how excited you were to be on the other side, as working with the team and at Capital is one of the greatest joys of your life. But I know that there's a lot of clarity around, you know, what you're excited to go back to, and maybe some things that aren't so important anymore that felt really important before. And I'd love to know what that's like.
I will say this has also made me feel really clear about about work. Mm. And that real success to me looks like a team that's independent and knows what they're doing on their own and right. without me looking over anybody's shoulder. And that's been such a gift to be able to watch how much more successful they've been when I've not been there.
That's not true.
But they have, you know, and I think that truly that feels like success. Yeah. And I think you can feel it. I think people are just singing, you know, like mm-hmm. they're being their best selves and doing the best at their jobs. And I really have enjoyed watching that. And I was very shocked by that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that I'm a total micromanager. I have experience doing each right. job in the store. So I do know how it's supposed to happen and being able to let that go and really let them do it on their own. That's been fantastic.
Something you've always said was that you dreamed about the business being, living beyond you.
Yeah, it's not me.
Yeah.
It's not a business if it's me.
Just in thinking about the team and your legacy with women and something that the way that you champion women and what you want for women and what you see for women. When you started to correspond with us really early on about what you were feeling and that you were scared mm-hmm. and you would be away from the office for a while and then what you chose, it was, again, back to the word clear, it was all really clear and it was really empowering, I think, for a lot of us to watch someone go through a health journey or crisis, however you want to call it, in a really empowered, true way because you shared it with us.
Mm.
Where I think a lot of people in moments like that pull back and it's mm-hmm. a moment they're going through alone and you let us share with you and we learned.
Yeah. One of the best parts about working in this business has been working with women and men of all ages and to be able to, to appreciate that everybody's in different stages in their lives mm-hmm. and going through different things and, to be able to share during that process, you know, my friend Lisa always says you should have a best friend 10 years younger and a best friend 10 years older because they both can be like, don't worry about that. It's
right.
not a big deal.
Right.
And I've always felt that about work that with my team that we're all like that. I guess I'm the oldest, but, but.
Well, I think you were literally the first person to tell us about things like menopause. Somehow, like nobody talked to us about it.
Perimenopause.
There we go. None of us, I mean.
Babies. I mean, that was the first one to have a baby, I think, you know.
Pregnancy, the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yes. And I think that's been from probably several weeks out, I showed my scars to the girls at work before I showed my husband, maybe. But there you are I feel really comfortable and I feel it is a safe environment to share and to share challenges and to, mm-hmm. and also, yeah, to say, if this ever happens for you, mm-hmm. you can do this. I do think transparency and mm-hmm. honesty is empowering. And I think that mm-hmm. that's the other thing. And maybe, I don't know if it's a Southern thing or, you know,
fashion thing,
maybe. Yeah. Everything's perfect. Everything's perfect. Everything's fine. I'm fine. I'm not fine. And I wanted my team to know that. And I didn't want people to be, Meredith, I live in my hometown. And so I think that, you know, I know a lot of my clients are mm-hmm. people I've known my whole life. I didn't want people to whisper about me or mm-hmm. to say, oh, well, she had this, it must be this, or, you know, I didn't want them to speculate, I guess. I've started to ease back into work a little bit, and I was there this week and ran into the girl, again, she's probably 60 years old, but the gal who taught me how to swim when I was 3 or 4.
Oh.
She's a client. She's been a client forever, and she said, hey, how are you? So glad to see you. Did you have a good summer? Like, what have you been doing? And, you know, there's this moment where I thought, you know, where I was sort of like, I could say, great,
yeah.
everything's great. And I said, Kathleen, I'm doing fine, but I actually just am recovering from a double mastectomy.
Mm.
And I think, I don't know if it made her uncomfortable. I don't think, I've known her my whole life. I mean, it was like this thing where you feel like, am I going to be a real authentic person mm-hmm. and really be honest about what is happening? Or am I going to be fake and mm-hmm. everything's fine? One of the things that has really surprised me is I thought that I would feel, if I'm being honest, I would feel imperfect in a bad way. I thought I would feel unattractive. And I do feel like the Japanese pottery that, you know, they fill in with the gold. And
yeah.
And in Japan, you know, imperfection is perfection. And so I do feel like that. I feel like the hard things have made me better.
Do you feel different? Because something about you feels different.
I feel different.
Yeah. Do you have words to how you feel different?
I do feel that way. I feel radiant. Yeah. I feel lighter.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah. I feel like I'm here now.
I wanted to circle back a little bit to fashion.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something we're here on what we wore.
Uh-huh.
And well, we should also talk about.
Do you want to know what I wore?
I actually do. Yeah. I do want to know what you want to wear, what you wore.
What I wore in the surgery. There's a woman that worked in the fashion industry and got breast cancer and started a company where she makes clothes for mastectomy.
Do you remember the name?
Anna Ono.
Okay.
And it was so nice. These wrap pajamas, and I wore them every day.
It feels good because of the fabric or because they were loose?
It's just because it was made for all of the things that you need.
Yeah.
It was smart and it was thoughtful and it was, I don't know, kind.
Was there more of that out there than you expected or less?
None.
None. Huh.
No, I mean, very little.
Yeah.
And I think for something, I mean, what was your statistic again?
1 in 8 women have breast cancer.
1 in 8 women, yeah, are diagnosed with breast cancer. So yeah, I was shocked by that. I think nobody talks about it enough. I mean, I think I told you too, like I found some of the most helpful, actually the most helpful pre and post mastectomy were blogs, personal blogs. And they were people that I did not relate to at all.
Like I read some.
Not at all. But they were so helpful, you know, to say these are some things you'll need and
electric toothbrush because you can't
brush your teeth. Yeah. I mean, yeah, all that kind of stuff. But there's nobody really talks about it. My mother didn't tell me that. You know, I don't know. There's a lot of shame around it, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably unattractive to talk about. I don't know.
I find it quite the opposite. I think it's very attractive.
I do too, but I think that's what we've been taught, I guess. Yeah. You know, people are very quiet about it.
I'm proud of you for being here and for changing the narrative, because I think these are the little moments of hearing someone talk about something that they might have gone through, they could go through, and they'll know to be more open, or that they might find the random person on Instagram that's really actually quite supportive and able to share with them. I just, the more open we all are, I think that affects all of us at some point. One of the people that you resonated with from the fashion industry was Nina Garcia, who's the editor-in-chief of Elle magazine.
Mm-hmm.
What was it about her, because she was in the fashion industry, that you related to or appreciated?
That too was a little bit under the radar. Mm-hmm. You know, people didn't really know about it who worked in fashion until after the fact. And I think she missed a whole fashion season for it. Liz Tilberis, who was the editor of Harper's Bazaar, died from breast cancer. It's like there's talk about it, but there's not real talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, she's a warrior.
Yeah.
It's not like, here's how hard this was. And it was ugly and it was really, really tough, but I got through it and you can't do kind of that. I mean, Nina's was like that. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that's been kind of shocking is how many friends said to me, I'm so sorry about your diagnosis, but it really does remind me that I need to get a mammogram. And I'm like, wow, people actually don't get mammograms every year. That's pretty shocking.
When should you start getting a mammogram?
I think it's 40, but I think it's your doctor's discretion. But I think it's 40 and it's every year.
Right. And you started when you were 38 just because of your mom's history?
Exactly. And my genetics. You know, it's not fun at all. And for me, it was never fun because it was always super depressing and it was always some possible problem. And, and so I definitely didn't want to do it every year. But this one also, by the way, I mean, this was not my yearly mammogram. I went early. This was 6 months after my previous mammogram. So it was early.
Mm-hmm.
So it must have been growing.
Is there anything that was unexpected that you learned about yourself in the process?
I've never enjoyed my husband so much.
That's a gift.
Yeah, he's incredible and fun and just he's wonderful. And and also my sister. I mean, my sister's 5 years younger. And so we always sort of treated her like she was our niece. You know, she was so much younger than my brother and I. She was such an amazing nurse, and I just adored her. And I strangely, like that second surgery, she said, do you need me to come this time? And I said, please go. I really just wanted to be with her again. Yeah. I just love that. And to have, you know, full 8 hours a day, mm-hmm. you know, that you could be with somebody that you trust completely and love being with. I mean, I just felt so lucky. Mm-hmm. I think it's rare.
Well, I think seeing you this rested and present and peaceful, I think maybe one of the things I'm looking at or thinking about is your career and your mm-hmm. job has been so opposite of that. I always envision you like tearing up the streets of Paris and Market and being away for a long time and just work, work, work.
And I'm a fast walker.
And
too.
You're fast.
And super, super impatient. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, hopefully that this wore that out of me.
Yeah.
Just the impatience and the, I don't know, lack of understanding for other people. I think it really cleared a lot of stuff for me. I will go back to buying again. Mm-hmm. I think I'll do it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll do it better. And I think I'll do it in a more edited way.
Yeah.
Like my investment, I guess emotional investment mm-hmm. wise, I think I'll do it smarter. It made me feel very grateful for building a career that I love and want to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to reflect on that, you know, and to reflect on why it is, why I do it, you know, what I love about it, why I can't wait to get back. And I'm not... I can't wait to get back in a different way. I mean, mm-hmm. I just came from acupuncture and she said, you really can't just jump in and expect to work the same way you did mm-hmm. before this, because you're a different person. And I am a different person. That's okay.
What are you thinking is on the other side, or what are you excited about in the new chapter?
Well, you know, when Perry went back to school for architecture when he was 40, I think,
mm-hmm.
after a couple of different careers, and it was just what he always wanted to do. And I think I encouraged him and supported him in that and just said, I don't want to be married to somebody that's not doing what they really want to do and mm-hmm. what they really love. And he always said, you know, I want to be an architect because I want to be able to work until I'm 100. I want to be able to work until the day I die. That's the kind of career I want,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that it's been clear to me, as much as fashion is not completely supportive of ill health or of aging, I know that I want to do this mm-hmm. forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do. This is what I want to do. And I'll do it in different ways, and I'll be involved in different ways, mm-hmm. I would think, along the way. But I really love what I do very much.
What are some of the things that you feel like you'll approach differently or actually hands-on do differently, if anything?
Well, I mean, I saw the schedule of the podcast coming up, and I got, you know, a month ago maybe, and I got nervous. Mm-hmm. And I worried about, is my voice different? You know, because I've literally had an amputation.
Yeah.
That worried me. And I think that also just being at home for mm-hmm. 3 months and I worried, and I am worried. I mean, am I going to be able to relate to people? And am I going to be able to connect with people? I mean,
right.
I don't know. I mean, I do feel fundamentally changed
mm-hmm.
as a person.
Well, this isn't season 6, but we're doing a special holiday capsule. Your first few episodes back will be for the holidays before we get to season 6.
And the first one's with Sadat
uh-huh.
and Jana from Gem Palace. I'm uh-huh. excited about that. That's our holiday capsule, but we have season 6 starting in the new year. We talked a lot about it and weren't sure if we had said all we needed to say about what we wore, but I guess we haven't.
I don't think we have. I'm not sure we
ever
will ever have. Yeah. But I think it's for the reasons we just talked about. I think you're different. I think your questions are different. I think the insights will be different from the interesting people that we always have. And I think that we've realized there are so many fascinating people and fascinating stories and all of these unexpected moments that pop up and that we can all find inspiration and authenticity in, and yep. especially in the fashion industry right now, too. I think so much is changing and some of the stories will catch, like Indre from Paravel, she's going back to school. It just feels like someone's approaching sustainability different. There's a lot of change, and then there's also just the fact that we continually find ourselves in other people's stories.
Yeah, and that we're just humans and we're just going through life.
Yeah.
And all of the challenges along that journey.
Thank you for sharing with us today.
Thanks for letting me.
Yeah, and thank you for being who you are in the world, but who you are, I think, again, to those who know you well or have been a part of your team, for sharing in the way that you have. It really has, I think, changed things for us too. And I know for me personally, after we did lose a friend, the minister was talking about what a joy it is that she was here for our earthly pilgrimage.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad to do this earthly pilgrimage with you.
Thank you.
And to see you emerge so beautifully and go into this next chapter.
Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah.
Love you.
I love you too.
Meredith, what did you wear to prom?
Oh, God. It's so bad. But everybody's brought it up. I had a BCBG.
Nice.
Uh-huh. We went to New York. It was a whole thing to pick it out from the sale rack. The awkward, you know, asymmetrical kind of hem. Lots of beads.
What color?
Purple.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is my favorite color. But it was not one of my finest moments. It was not one of my finest moments. It's hard. Those pictures are funny.
Oh, wow. I want to see a picture of that.
Yeah.
I bet you look beautiful.
Had some tendrils.
I know about those. I have a 16-year-old.
She does have some tendrils now.
Yeah. What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.